Dentistry is changing. Technology, education, and resources are closer to our fingertips now more than ever. Are you ready to learn what millennial dentists are doing to exceed patient expectations, enjoy dentistry more, and take more vacations? Or how this generation can join up with the previous ones to make for an unstoppable dental team? Well, wait no longer. Here are your hosts of The Millennial Dentist, Dr. Holsinger, Dr. Payray, and Dr. Sully Sullivan.
Yes. Welcome to the State of the Union.
I got my figs on.
The State of the Union Millennial Dentist Podcast episode. Hey, pour me a little bit.
The State of the Union, we have everybody here in attendance.
What we want to do this episode is basically talk about the podcast, what our thoughts are so far, talk about things that are changing, happening, recaps, talk about where we are. We started this podcast almost like 6, 7, 8 months ago. And so I'm excited to see that. Holsinger, what's been new with you?
Man, just finished up my second year in practice from residency. So it's going good. We're still working on me buying into the practice, making some progress.
Well, I think all of us want to know what the status of that is. What is the status of that?
Man, we're just working through some things. We've done an evaluation and all that. We're just trying to figure out the numbers and see exactly.
Do we need to call Gregor again like we did on the HSA episode back in the day?
Oh, man. No, we're good right now. We're working through
all right,
it.
Good.
You know what I mean?
So I feel like that's somewhat of a, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
So we're at the 24-month mark, though. So we'll just keep a timeline on it, see how it's going. But yeah, but there's some good promise there. We've had some good conversations and it's headed in the right direction.
So let me tell you all about, okay, so one thing we've been doing lately is I've gotten really big into the sleep stuff. So 6 months ago, I did no sleep. Well, I guess when we started the podcast, I had just started dabbling in the sleep stuff and I really hadn't committed to it. We had bought a take home sleep test, but we weren't doing a lot of it. So 2 weeks ago, I went to Raleigh and took Dr. Erin Elliott's course, and there T-Bone's also there, but I like to say it's her course because really she did all the actual teaching.
So it's a 2-day course.
It's a 2-day course. And it's what's great about their course is it's really about implementation. So but the reason I brought this up, because Donnie, I met Donnie there. He's a dentist that's doing it. He's got like multiple practices, killing it. We should probably get you on the podcast. But anywho, it's been just mind blowing since I have come back and really got reinvigorated in doing it. We bought another take home sleep test. So now basically every night that sleep test is going home with different people and getting read. So a couple stories that have been just kind of crazy. So one guy, he had had, he's just turned 50. He's got 3 kids, just had his 3rd heart attack back in November. And I'm like, that's freaking crazy. So he comes in here and of course, you know, he's like 5'8", you know, 180 pounds, not huge overweight, but just definitely like that short, stocky, like built for sleep apnea kind of build. And then I look at him and he's got that just generalized wear, you know, big time bruxer. He's got those lab fraction lesions right there at the gingival margin. And I'm like, dude, you were taking this. I said, if you want to remain a patient here, you're taking the thing home. Now, I don't even charge for that part. So he was going to take it home anyways. But so he takes it home. And
so where do you get this piece? I'm just a little lost. So there's a piece that you give to every patient that takes it home?
Yeah. So we actually have a take home sleep study.
Where do you get that
test
from?
You can order them from a company that makes them. Okay. And it tracks the pulse ox. It has a pulse ox to track oxygen saturation level. It tracks a nasal cannula. And so they wear it and they sleep in it. Yep. And then they bring it back and we get a whole report. I'll show you in a little bit. But it tracks all this stuff and then it gives us a score and we actually send that into a cloud to a sleep physician and they score it and give us like a reading on it. Basically.
Dude, that's cool.
Way cool.
Because I think legally,
how much
like
is
dentists
that?
Can't diagnose
Bingo.
Sleep apnea.
So we can't actually, you can't make actual.
But these are medical cross-coding too?
Yes. So you can bill. So then that's another reason it's good to do, because if you have that diagnosis from a sleep physician, it is now a medical condition. So you can bill it to whatever. So I've been huge on it. So the guy sends it home, comes back the next day, and his score was a 46. Now, that means nothing to you, but so let me tell you. So that number is called the AHI, and it's the apnea hypopnea index. And that's
what's a good number on that?
So 0 to 5 is normal, 5 to 15 is mild, 15 to 30 is severe, and greater than 30 is, or excuse me, 15 to 30 is moderate, greater than 30 is severe. So that's how many apneic events you're having per
hour.
That's
almost emergency. He needs to go to a hospital.
So He was, so that's what was crazy. He wasn't breathing for like 30 seconds at a time.
Oh, man.
So then he would breathe for 2 seconds and then not breathe again.
Then he'd probably wake up during that time.
Oh, yeah. So his average pulse, that's what's crazy, his average pulse was like 95. So you figure his average pulse.
His capnography or his oxygen saturation, how much did it drop?
That's a great question. So he spent 20 minutes below 90%.
Oh, my God. That's crazy. And when I get IV on patients, and if they drop for like a second below 90, I'm like,
the alarm's going off. I know. Exactly. We're sitting there going, breathe. So that's what's so crazy. So I'm sitting there going, we're like, dude, you wonder why you're having, and now there's probably other things that why he's having heart attacks, but I was like, dude, you're wondering why, like, your heart is working all night long. I mean, like, it's, and you see it fight to like, to breathe. Like, and you know, you see his chest like bam, 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 because it tracks like chest rise and stuff. And so that's pretty crazy. Another cool story, this patient right here that I was going to show y'all, she's like 75, petite woman, you know, someone you would never think would have sleep apnea. She comes in here and for a crown and tells me, she's like, I got this app and it tracks my sleep. And it tells me I've been snoring. And like, I don't, is something going on? And I was like, well, let me look.
Did it like have a bracelet, like a jawbone or like a Fitbit that she wore?
No, this is just like one of those like recording apps.
Noise? It's a noise based on noise?
I guess. It just records like you're sleeping. I don't know. I don't know what that was.
It's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
It's recording of sleeping.
So, but what's crazy about this is she, the one that had been, I had already referred to, I talked about doing pinhole graph for because there's so much recession. And I had send her, I had said, send her to Meister to get another console onto a connective tissue graft. Because, you know, what I'm seeing now is that all these patients that have all this wear, clenching, grinding, and recession, the ones that we've been like, oh, you're grinding, you need a night guard, are now probably not breathing great. And so that's why they're bruxing. So she tells me, sure. So I'm like, let's send it home with you. So I send it home with her, comes back, get the sleep study. So I pull the sleep study up on, and it has like a report I can track, scroll through the entire night. She's got all this apnea stuff happening from like 10:30 at night to like 1:30. And then she breathed perfectly the rest of the night. And I was like, what the heck? Like, this is weird data. Like, what in the world? So I call her and say, hey, like, you know, how did you sleep? And she goes, well, I didn't sleep very good at the beginning. I kept coughing. So I ended up raising my bed. I have one of those sleep number beds. And about 1:30, I raised my bed up. So what she had done, so she was having all this apneic stuff when she was laying down. And then once she raised her bed up to where it propped her up, all of a sudden that opens up her airway better. So she stopped and she slept great. So I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. So I said, okay, well, let's do this. I want you to come in, retake the test, and I don't want you to raise your bed up. I was like, I know you're not going to start, try to not do it, and if you have to do it, fine, but try to like do it the whole night. Comes back, does a score, holy cow. She was like a 50, like super, super severe. No obstructions, but just like tons of apnea. Like she just never really, like she was constantly up and down because she just wasn't breathing great. And it's like, holy cow, like that, it starts to explain things like, okay, well, that's why the recession, that's, you know, the clenching, grinding, like now when you're not breathing great, it's causing you to do this. And then on the flip side of that is, it was just fascinating to me to see, like, you know, how much position has a huge role. And we see that too, because one of the cool things that it tracks is if you're on, it's got like a kilometer, like your iPhone. So it tracks whether you're on your back, your right side, your left side, you know, on your chest. And so it'll give us the individual score for each area. So a lot of times we'll see somebody's like a 60 on their back, but there are 2 on their right side, left side. And so it averages out to like a 12 because it's a totally.
So how do you get this machine? How can I purchase this machine?
Dude, you buy one. They're $3,500.
$3,500?
From Bravon.
And then how much do you charge the patients to do this sleep study?
So this is how I operate, which I'm not saying this is the best way or not, but this is how I'm currently doing it. My goal is to break down as many hurdles for patients as possible, because I feel like it's a very important thing. It's very prevalent. And if I show somebody the raw data that like, this is what's going on, because a lot of these people are in denial, right? Like they're like, I don't snore. I don't have that, blah, blah, blah. But if I show you raw data that's like very conclusive, it's hard to tell me like, no, I think I'll pass on the appliance. Like the heart attack guy, right? Like, it's like, how is he going to say no to buying? Like, really, I should be able to name my price to him for what, because ultimately he now realizes how important it is, right? So I'm not charging at all to take the sleep study unless it comes back and we see that, hey, something's going on we need to send this to a sleep position to get scored, in which case I charge them $200 for the sleep study. But if we end up going forward with appliance, that goes towards their appliance cost. But initially, if I tell them, look, if this thing comes back like pretty normal, or we can, because you can tell pretty easily on the graph, like what's breathing and what's not. And then it generates an auto, like assisted score. Okay. If you come back and you're totally normal and there's nothing going on, like we won't worry about it.
How often do you send them to the sleep doctor?
I'd say probably 90%. Because what's happened, because one, the people I'm making do it, I feel pretty confident they have it, and they usually do. So it's been very rare, because you're kind of cherry picking, right? Because if you walk in and you're like, you know, 6 foot, 250, you know, and your neck size is like 18 inches, like you're taking it home because you got sleep apnea.
Sounds like solely stereotyping people.
I think I'm completely stereotyping like, people. So do you I'm have totally okay with that? I'm profiling.
That's good. But it's been also prevalent on little bitty women.
Yeah.
It's been,
well, that's what's weird. Like her. Like she doesn't fit the profile.
Yeah.
But they do say, and I can profile a little bit because I statistically it says that if you're male over 40 and have a neck size greater than 17 inches, you're like significantly more likely to have.
But look at the entire industry that's come around this stuff with the whole sleep number bed.
The Zipa.
All this stuff.
Dad's of the house.
That's basically, we're not doing it, so somebody's filled a niche.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, these people are going to screen a position.
Lean them up, like in their bed, so they can get a clear airway.
And the other thing is, you ask their, what we've referred to now as their sleeping partner.
Their bed partner. That's the PC way to ask.
Yeah.
Sleeping partner. Ask the spouse.
Does your bed partner tell you, snore?
Yeah. Ask the women, and they're telling you that they're ratting out the husbands big time.
And we're having patients like stop snoring. Like that's crazy. That's really cool.
So just a couple of things now. When some of the things that people have to do in order to treat them, is it something they wear at night? So you had a great story. You said 6 months now it's been you wearing yours, and it's changed the way it's changed your life, even in the practice.
Hold
in
on,
the day.
I have to give Dad a mic now since Dad walked it.
We have a guest today.
Yes, what's up, thanks, world?
Thanks for joining us on Facebook Live again. I don't know if we can see everybody in here. Probably not.
It's all right. I just finished working out, so I'll stay on the sidelines. So we went to Cereal World in August. We took the staff, and Sully and the staff all went to the sleep apnea courses. And we bought the Braybon sleep study machine, and I was the first person we tried it on. And I failed it miserably.
How about that night you slept during the study, though? Do you feel like you slept normal or like worse than normal?
I want to retake it because I probably didn't sleep as well as I would have liked to.
But okay, so this is my thing, that because, yeah, I've done it twice. I've taken it twice. You sleep like crap, but it's hard to go to bed. But once you go to bed, everything's subliminal. Like you're not.
Yeah, you're not
asleep,
thinking about the heart rate monitor.
Oh, I'm not sleeping good because there's a nasal cannula in my thing. Like data's data. Does it make sense?
Nasal cannulas mess up my sleeping every time. Okay, though.
Fine. You can't really fake it off.
That's my point. Is you can't, like, a bad night's sleep's not going to, like you're not going to snore more because you have a nasal cannula. Like,
Yeah.
You know, you had the lady who adjusted her bed, which, you know, you can do something like that. But other than that, you're not going to really fake it out. You know, we tell people if you take sleeping aids, you know, Ambien or something, take it, because we want this to be your normal night's sleep. If you know, don't go tie one on and drink a whole fifth of whiskey unless you do that every night. You know, so if you drink a lot of wine, be your normal wine. So anyway, I failed it miserably, and so we ordered the appliance. I took it home, and the first night, my wife was like, "Are you alive?" And so I have worn it every night religiously. I think twice I've gone to the lake cabin and forgotten it. And I've actually wanted to make me another one to keep up there, because those nights were like, oh my gosh, I'm realizing now what I'm doing. I don't want to fall asleep because I won't breathe.
Well, mind you, like today, he's still the worst test I've seen. So like, he wasn't breathing for like 80 seconds. So I have zero doubt that it will add years to his life. That's what I think. That's really cool.
You know, the last few nights I've been trying to go to bed a little earlier, and my wife stays up and watches The Bachelor and stuff on DVR. So last night she comes in with a flashlight, shines it in my face, lifts up the covers to see if I'm breathing. She goes, "You made no sound." And I'm like, "Did you shine the light in my face like in the middle?" She goes, "Yeah, I didn't think you were breathing." This happens, not the flashlight, but this happens routinely. And we're hearing it from other patients as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a normal thing. And I use the example of, and I think all of dentists out there who put patients in night guards, they complain about the night guards. They don't like them. They say, I mean, how many people tell people they spit NTIs out, they're where they're going to swallow them. They find them at the bottom of the thing.
Now, how comfortable is it to wear these appliances?
Once you pop it in, you literally, you have to learn to kind of talk with it because you have to kind of keep your teeth together to, if you want to say something. There's not a lot of pillow talk with it. But yeah, maybe that's a good thing.
That's really set the mood. If you're single, I think I'd just suck it up.
Yeah.
Not breathe.
This is not something you wear on your first overnighter.
But to my point on the nightgirl, though, is people aren't complaining. No one has come in and been like, you know what? I don't want it. I don't like it. Because they're seeing such a big difference.
And because it's a digital appliance.
The one we're using is 522, and that's an expensive one. They range anywhere from like 350, 300 to.
They charge the patient like how much?
We're charging 2,000 because.
A couple grand.
Medical doesn't work as well in Tennessee, and we could be doing more. I know people that are charging upwards of 3,600, and they're medical billing, and they're getting like $5,000. But I'd say probably average is somewhere between $2,000 to $3,000.
So have you implemented this in the practice and see the return on the production?
Yeah. So since I bought the second sleep machine, since I really committed to it, which was doing that, I'm probably almost averaging like an appliance a day, an appliance every other day.
Wow, that's very good.
And you figure, okay, well, that's $2,000, 522, that's $1,500 profit basically. And most of my time is consult. And I'm trying to get to where I'm doing even less and less than that because I'm trying to train my team to be able to do all that because ultimately they're the ones sending the sleeps. I go in to check hygiene. I talk to them about it, but they're the ones programming it. They're the ones sitting at home. They're the ones downloading it. And then I can maybe review it with the patient, but then ultimately they're the ones that are scanning them for the appliance, taking the impression, doing all that to where, and which is nice, right? Because like if I could choose to either make $1,500 talking to someone versus working, I'd rather sit there and talk to them, right? Like, so yeah, well, we all know I like to talk, so I'm not faking anybody. So yeah.
So yeah, a couple things. We just did this on a hygienist. We're waiting for hers to come back.
Two of our hygienists are gonna be severe and won't wear CPAP. So they're gonna be in them, and I'm excited about that.
And the other one, one of the other hygienists, her husband is gonna qualify very easily.
We're profiling again.
We're profiling.
So how do you? So you ask every patient that comes in, you ask them if they have the difficulty sleeping.
Well, what we started doing is we've looked at the wear, we've looked at the recession.
I'm telling you, wear and recession are huge indicators.
Lingual tori. I had a guy come in today with lingual tori the size of your thumb.
Start asking, why do patients have this recession? Why do they have the wear? Why do they have the tori? Why do they have the indentions on their tongue? You know those patients that have like the scallop tongue all along? Why do they have these things? And if you don't have a reason, that's what I kind of think is cool about it too, is I do feel like I'm starting to think much more systemically.
Systemically, you're looking at more like Dr. Jason
Campbell.
Ask about
reflux. Yeah. And they go, oh, I'm taking
the pitting.
Nexium.
You know that pitting you see?
In the mouth. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the other things that's great about this too, because it's a digital appliance compared to a night guard, we all know what it's like to deliver a night guard that's high, that you grind on for 30 minutes and you've got acrylic flying all over the room. You got to get a vacuum when you're done. The delivery appointment, these come in a gift bag from Sirona. You literally hand them the gift bag. And so they come from Germany. It comes with 10 different settings.
So you can move them back and forth.
You can move them back and forth.
It's like a glove, dude. But it's crazy.
I gotta get one.
And because it's solid.
Yeah, I need one. I probably sleep like a baby.
It's milled and it's solid. It doesn't get all gnarly and it doesn't attract water like an acrylic resin-based thing does. It's not porous.
Now, is this something that you cannot get from a different lab? Like
so, there's other options. I think there's probably almost 50, 75 companies out there making these.
What is it called?
Like a sleep app, you know?
The actual device. This one's called
OptiSleep, but that's
OptiSleep.
You know, because we're using the Sirona workflow and making it all digitally, which we like. Scan the patient, take a George Gage bite with the cone beam, and then mesh the two images and send it digitally. So it's pretty cool.
And that's because your 3D has an airway.
The airway on 3D is really more of a diagnostic tool. This doesn't actually do anything.
It brings urgency and awareness to the discussion.
So is this like a sample right here?
That's a sample. Correct.
Or has this been in Dr. Sullivan's mouth?
No, that's
the last
a sample.
Month and
that's good to go.
Tired of it.
But we set people at a minute, at kind of an average with the George gauge, and then it comes with 10 different little bands. Oh, okay. So you can bring them, you can titrate them forward or backwards. So, you know, if somebody has, but really we haven't had anybody, I'd say we've done 35 or 40, maybe not that many. So, you know, I tell people it's kind of like I quit smoking and got baptized all on the same day. You know, I'm pretty evangelistic about it because it it feels different.
Well, it's been hard because I've been like super passionate too with like the staff and like trying because I'm seeing the realistic reality of what's happening and trying to, you know, convey that. And I'm like, look, everybody needs to be, you talking to everybody. It's like, frankly, almost everybody should be tested. That's like one of the things, like my goal as a practice, it's like part of you being a patient here is that you're going to have the opportunity to get a basically,
and I love the fact, I really love the fact that he's making it easy for people to test it out and try it, because it's kind of like those people that had a 3D x-ray and asking patients that, do you want to get implants? And they're like, yeah, like I'm missing teeth, I want to get implants. And they're like, okay, you got to pay $300 for an x-ray. And patient's like, well, not really, I don't want to do it. However, with the sleep is the same thing. He's making it more accessible and affordable for patients where they can try it and test it out. If they do qualify, which more than likely they are going to qualify, it makes them easier for him to actually...
Kind of cheating by profiling a little bit.
Well, and I'm excited too, because like it really, you know, it's like why we do... Why I like doing cosmetic cases, why anybody likes doing cosmetic cases or likes doing, because you know what? People don't thank you for fillings, but like I've asked some multiple people to like do a video testimonial about the sleep stuff. And they're like, heck yeah. Cause it literally is changing their life. One guy was like, I can't sleep. And he's like, you literally have changed. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
You
know?
Or like, we have people that are in separate bedrooms that are in their 40s to 50s.
Yeah, husband and wife.
I looked at one guy and said, your wife is hot. Why are you in a different bed?
They have problems. Yep.
Fact.
You know, it's crazy. And this is stuff that until you start asking the questions, people are kind of ashamed to go, yeah, we sleep in different bedrooms because I can't stand the way he snores or she snores. The women are, this is an equal opportunity issue here.
Now, I wonder, out of curiosity, how much of is that is the stress and other things and factors that causes them to, but maybe at the point of the stage or the status of what they're add in their life is making them not breathe at that point. Meaning like if they took the same test another month or another week, would that also be the same?
I don't know, but I think it's irrelevant because it's not, we're not doing something, we're not prepping a tooth. We're not taking a tooth out.
Yes.
Anything, what we're doing, and this is with my CPAP users, if you tell me you're on a CPAP, I'm going to wholeheartedly suggest you get this. Not to discontinue your CPAP. I would never tell somebody to do that. The analogy that I use is a CPAP is a plunger. You're trying to force air down something, whereas the sleep appliance opens up the pipes. You know, it's a little bit of a graphic illustration, but we all get that.
Well, and like my brother-in-law wears a CPAP, and he was telling me he has to clean it every 3 days. I guess like take it out, wash out the tubing, do all that stuff. So if you, and unfortunately, we've done a really crappy job, when I say we as medical providers, being physicians, dentists, everything, communicating about and being on the same page, because there's so many people who fall into that mild to moderate range who could be treated so adequately with an oral appliance, but they're getting a CPAP because that's all a physician can prescribe. And so,
yeah, and that's what I want to see. Like, how do people actually get to seek help for it? Where do they go to primary care and ask that? Well, like,
that's where they get screwed, right? Because if someone who knows they have sleep apnea, the people who are on CPAPs, they knew it. They had no other point. You know, the mild to moderate apnea person who just thinks they're getting older or they're tired all the time, they're frankly screwed in our society today because physicians aren't screening for it. 99% of dentists aren't screening for it. So like they just assume, oh, I'm tired, I have to get up. Like you said, the prostate thing, I have to go to the bathroom because I have to go to the bathroom. It's normal not to dream anymore. And all this stuff.
They just kind of learn to live with it in the sense that there's not enough opportunity.
It's kind of like the frog in the water. You know, it happens over time and you don't realize it.
That's a great point, man. This kind of opened my eyes in a way that tomorrow I'm going to start asking everybody or actually get that questionnaire. Give me that questionnaire.
Well, and there is a question. We've added to our med. I think the first place that everybody should start with is on their medical history. Yeah. It should say, do you wear a CPAP? Do you snore? And like, do you feel overly tired during the day? Do you experience excessive daytime sleepiness? I think is the buzzword.
And we've really started, at least I have, not prescribing the night guards for bruxism, but more going this direction because this is a bruxism device. And I feel like when I'm sleeping with this, I'm not really bruxing. I think it's a whole different.
Well, I mean, if you're getting a night guard prescribed in our office, you're taking a sleep device. I'm making you take the study because like I don't want to, because if I think if you make a night guard, you can make worse. But I don't want to talk about this all night.
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little sleepy. I might need a client.
Okay, what I want to talk about payment. let's talk about for a minute. Let's totally switch gears here a little bit. And I want to talk about, you are 6 months into a startup practice, big time. And I think you're killing it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that's going? And let's talk about that. Because that's a really good topic.
It's funny because you brought it up today. I was talking about to my assistants that how lucky I was to have them with me and how proud I was for them doing such a great job being with me. It's kind of like, it feels like a family. I have one front person and one back. Jennifer has been in the front and Gladys has been in the back. And we've been killing it. I mean, I feel like we've been doing very good, but just me, my personality, I always want to do more, you know, like want to do better and better. But at the same time, it's been very good. I'm happy and pleased. I'm just striving and working harder to get next month better.
What have been the hardest parts about a startup that you didn't expect?
Some of them, team management, the staff, that was a part of it. The first, like I said, right now, I'm so blessed and thankful for the staff and the team because at the beginning, that's where I went through the struggles of like, oh my gosh.
So how many team members did you go through?
I've gone, the first 2 months, 2.5 months, I went through 7 people. And it's different because the culture has changed. A lot of people, it's not the same. Or like the girls that get out of school right now, I feel like they go through a week maybe worth of classes, but that's not the problem. The skills is not my thing. It's the attitude. A lot of them that is just like, they just feel so entitled to their phones and they just, I don't know. It's just a lot of that whole going through staff interviewing and them and then seeing them work and working interviews. Is when I start realizing working interviews is where I needed to actually focus, like do more working interviews them like 4 or 5 days maybe, because not only the first day or second day you're going to realize, but after fifth day, they're going to be like, oh, they're going to show themselves more. So the staff thing was one of the things that I felt like I struggled at the beginning. The other thing was the grand opening, just the whole going through prepping and setting up for grand opening. But marketing, I do a lot of marketing myself, so that's been kind of overwhelming because I'm doing both, doing the marketing and Facebook page and Dr. Perry page, Instagram at the same time, and then the podcast was on top of that, trying to kind of do that at the same time, and working with Zest Locator research, doing research with them, and also going to Arizona trying to do teaching. So all of that in a sense kind of made it a little bit too much at first, but now I feel much more calmer and more.
What's the patient flow like, and what's been successful, or what do you feel like's worked well that's kind of gotten you out of the gate?
One number one thing, quality, that I feel like all my patients are going to reviews, writing stuff and coming from. I had a patient from Knoxville.
You're asking these patients to do this?
Yeah, the reviews. Yes, I do want them because they are like, oh my god, they keep thanking you, and I'm like, don't thank you. Please go online, write a review. That's how you can thank me. But the way that it's been, it's the number one thing that they like is the communication with the patient. One of the things like all these patients have in common when they write reviews, like my doctor actually sat down and talked to me, and not think of me as a number, like they have to see that many people, or they felt way more comfortable because I actually sat down and listened to them to see what their needs are. There's with the type of dentistry with the full mouth, these people have gone through so many dentists, they've got so much work done, and when they go to another dentist or just whenever they go to a consult, if the doctor doesn't really sit down and go through their whole mouth and see what's the bigger picture, what's going on, and just give them a treatment plan and leaves the room and assistant goes and tries to explain, a lot of these people, patients don't feel appreciated. Like they just don't feel like doctor didn't spend enough time with me, or they didn't kind of go through this with me. So I felt a lot of these patients right now, I'm very lucky to have and to be able to produce as much as I did, is because I sit down with the patient who I thought they have anything in their pocket, or some patient that came in with a Maserati and I was like, I spend the same amount of time. I don't really judge anybody based on what is in their mouth, or I spend enough good time. So the communication has been the biggest thing where the patient's been appreciative and grateful for it.
How do you feel like, is that a hard, because I one thing I struggle with is when I'm and I ask this to you because you present a lot of pretty big treatment plans, and your treatment plans, it's not uncommon in the type of dentistry you're doing to get up into like the teens of thousands, right? And as a new dentist, it's sometimes hard. And I think this translates to even new graduates who are trying to sell a $1,200 crown, because it can be difficult to come up with a treatment plan or try to like get them to go for treatment when it's something that's that expensive. Is that hard for you to do, or how do you kind of wrap your head around that? Because I'm sitting here going, man, that's expensive for me. And you're used to, you're used to trying to get them to do a $400 crown in dental school. So how do you,
It comes to be about building that relationship with the patient in a way that,
because like one thing I try to do, like, and this is keeps happening to me, is like, it'll be like a $15,000 treatment plan, and I'll be like, I need to like give them to him for 12. Like I have a tendency to like try to like, even though my prices are good prices, like come down even more, you know? So how do you do that and stick to your fees and feel confident about that?
I feel like with these type of cases and some of these stuff, the patients, most of the patients listen to you listen to us because we're a provider. They trust us in a way that they understand that we are there to help them and care about them. The way that I'm looking and I approach these cases, and you've been in my practice, the consult room is where I really make most of all the money. And I sit down with them. I sit down and go through the case, like what I'm going to do first or second step and third step and the clinical timeline, how it's going to take, and then the models. So in a sense, because it's funny, what you're saying is exactly what T-Bone was asking me a couple of weeks ago in an interview. He was like, how are you doing that much volume? The collection, how did you do it in 4 months out? And how, like, is it marketing? Is it this and this? And he's trying to pinpoint one thing. Sure. And I'm like, I think it comes down to the personality and being able to sell it, not sell it in a bad way, but in a way that the patient and you sit down and not cross from each other, but also looking at it together to that screen, for example. Like me and you as a patient, we'll look at it and we're like, let's come up with a plan, just like what you said with the sleep apnea stuff. You're trying to help the patient. And that's the same thing with when I look at in full math, I'm like, look at where you've been, look at how much money you've already spent, but let's look and see where we are going to head towards. Now, most of the time I find out from patient what's their budget.
How do you do that?
Like, okay, so if you see a case where there are, you can always judge a case by the x-ray as far as how much work they've been done. So you tell how much money they've already been to a lot of dental chairs and they've worked. Then also looking at it, a lot of times it's easy when I start telling patients, do you like a removable piece or do you like fixed? And everybody likes to say they like the fixed. And when I say then I start, I'm like, okay, well, fixed is usually starts around $15,000 and it goes up, and I look at their eye movement.
their eyes.
Like looking to see what are they shocked
or their surprised. Or their pants. Right? They go change their pants.
Most of the patients that are for the full mouth, they've already done the research online. They've gone through YouTube. They've gone Google. They've researched in like full mouth implants and things like that, to where it doesn't bother them as much when you give them that 15, 20 grand workup.
Today's patients, the ones that we're seeing come in, have done their homework.
Right.
You know, I sat down with a hygiene patient yesterday and checked him, and he goes, so you like Smith & Wesson's and Colts?
Yeah,
he'd been online and he had read my biography on the website.
And that's a great point.
And that was, you know, I said, oh, you read the website. He goes, I did my research.
And that's a great point, because I get a lot of patients.
And I will give you props. You have done the work. You've gone to your CE. You've done it. Yeah, I've never been to your office, but in talking to you as a dentist who's been practicing 30 years.
Thank you.
You've got, you can back up what you're talking about. You're not just throwing it out there.
I appreciate it. No, it's really, like I said, it's mostly the relationship you build with them. At the same time, I feel like today I had a case. A lot of doctors do things for patients and don't back it up. Meaning they don't, if you messed up, for example, we all have bad days. You have days that we're like, we messed up.
You know, don't oversell and underdeliver.
Correct. And then this, the patient left and he has his whole family wants to come now. But at the same time, I feel like when you do something that you feel like you could have done more or it's not right, then make it right. Maybe you made a mistake then, but now, right now, instead of charging the patient, well, this is the patient, just to give you an idea. He just had a crown placed and he paid $1,200 for the crown to be placed. And then he got sensitive, and then the doctor is like, oh, we cannot save it. And then he pulled the crown that he put in 2 weeks ago. And he charged him another $175 to pull it. And then I'm like,
gosh,
how
people
you
sleep
make sense?
At night.
Right.
Well, only the ones that have the sleep device.
Yeah. So it was just to me, I felt like, well, no wonder if I'm just a decent human being, this guy is going to sell. I mean, I can sell anything to this guy because look at what's been going on.
Man,
so some of these stuff is really not me. It's just what's going on out there with people trying to do stuff.
Well, I've got an assistant who left the dentist because a patient came in on a Thursday afternoon with the crown off. The crown needed to be redone because of decay. So he charged the patient $150 to re-cement the crown temporarily, only to cut it off on Monday morning and redo the crown. And she just, it was another, I don't know if he did the original crown, but he was going to redo the crown. So he charged her on Thursday afternoon, you know, $150, $200 is a re-cement fee only for the 3 days temporary. And, you know, when she came to me, she worked to work for me. I said, why are you leaving? And she said, it's some moral issues. And I was thinking, oh gosh. And, you know, where does that go? It turns out it was just the way he was treating his patients. She just wasn't comfortable with that.
But no, it's been good. I'm honestly so happy that I did this. And now the more and more I'm working, I feel like it's, I love it so much more that I'm on my own. I feel like I have more control. At the same time, having that team is helping me to kind of get more stable to where I could kind of do other stuff. Especially now that I was thinking of adding another person to be my personal assistant, half to help me with other stuff that I want to do, like managing Facebook, managing Instagram pages. I feel like it's so important. Like we were talking with Sully the other day, we need a market, like a director, somebody in the office to be full-time on Facebook and make sure we get all that. I mean, especially you guys' office, because it's so diverse and you guys have so many rich culture in here for so many years that people like to see this from their home on their Facebook. They like to see you had something on with the dog, like you guys posted on Facebook.
We had freaking, it reached 10,000
and 10,000, look at that.
Like 5,000 views.
We've had people now call and say, I want to come in and get it done, but I want to make sure the dog's there.
Yeah, literally patients have like requested the dog. It's pretty funny.
How much are you paying the dog?
The dog gets, the dog's now on basically salary because everything's getting deducted, which is fantastic. That's pretty nice. Food's free or inexpensive. So it's been
That's good. It's been blessing.
What do y'all think about the podcast so far? We've gotten I'm kind of blown away. We just crossed, I didn't even tell y'all, we just crossed over 10,000 downloads.
What? You've been holding this out on us?
10,000 downloads.
So we've had 10,000, we're averaging over 500 downloads an episode.
Nice.
So
what are some of your favorites or some of the ones that you felt comments. Like he was good?
Man, I would say the ones I've talked the most on, probably.
I don't know. I've had some good ones. There's been, the last couple have been great. I think what's been so fun about this for me personally is we've gotten to meet so many cool people here.
Yeah,
and I come out almost every episode like motivated about something. Which is really
me
fun.
Too. And that's like each episode, he opened my eyes in a way that like, look at this guy.
And then you want to do it the next day in the office.
Yes.
I have a problem about trying to implement
that's
things
true.
Really too fast.
It's like going to CE coming back and buying the whatever.
Which, by the way, I already did this, and this is a recommendation to both of you. From now on, when you go to a CE course like that, go ahead and block off the first day back's morning for like no patients, but the staff has to be there. So when we come back from Dentsply Surrounding World, we've blocked off the entire morning. We're going to bring in lunch, everything, but everybody's expected to be there because we'll have breakfast and then we'll do lunch. But basically, the whole morning is going to be almost like
we may
like
want
to
block the whole day off.
I may seriously do that because it's that important, I think, to come back and be like, I want to share what we've learned. I want to show how we're going to implement them. And I want, instead of me just coming back and like trying to hit the ground running and like, oh, why aren't, you know, I think it's really important to like debrief.
Sometimes we expect the staff to read our mind, and because we went to a CE course to think that they already somehow osmotically have picked up what we just spent 3 days or 4 days listening to.
Yes, this whole CE high, they like wait for you to come back and get excited for it, and they just hope for it to die out quickly.
They just kind of wait, you know, if they can take a day or two off, he'll be back to normal here in a little while and his desk will be dirty.
Do you guys do, for your staff, do you have like vacation or benefits as far as they can take off from work?
Yeah, I think we have, you get 2 weeks vacation after a year, and then after a couple years, like maybe 5 years, we give a third week.
Which is 8 days or 12 days.
Yeah, because we work 4-day work weeks. That's our benefits. We have other benefits, but you know.
What are some of the other benefits you guys offer? I just want to know because I'm...
We have a 401k plan. You need to set up a 401k plan if you don't already have one. So they're getting some money. So we have two retirement plans. We have a health insurance. So I think we have pretty good benefits. I think it's pretty cush.
They get two personal days a year, whether that's they're sick, their kid's sick.
I thought we got rid of those. I thought we were just going to straight, like, you got this many days.
Oh, maybe we went... Maybe we did get rid of those. I don't know. You know, I do have to laugh a little bit. Bill Cosby used to have a skit that, you know, you weren't really a parent if you only had one child. And I'm listening to Payman over here talking about staff problems with two employees. And I'm sitting here laking at Sully going, we've got nine or about to add 10. And how many do you have, Holzinger?
We got 15.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
Holzinger is the dad award over here.
Yeah, but if you can keep doing $100,000 in collections of two staff members,
that's right. All
through us. Yeah.
Yeah, just don't hire anybody.
Else. Yeah,
minimize
keep
your problems.
Keep doing what you're doing, brother.
One of the things my dad used to tell me about this, so seriously, is when you add staff members, it's not linear, it's exponential.
Yeah.
So going from, you know, two to three is not just one more time. It's, you know, it's twice as hard or four times as hard. And I think that's true, especially, you know, you get some of these kids, younger ladies that, you know,
and you have to buy so much more, like, office supplies, too. Like, the toilet paper. Like, we have to buy so much more toilet paper.
Careful,
now.
You're going to cross. You can get.
You have to buy so much, like, forks and spoons and paper. I mean, like, everything adds up.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, and you crazy. You mentioned it earlier about how, I don't think we were talking yet, but, you know, payment doesn't, you don't have to deal with clicks yet. You know, Holzinger's got enough team members that he's got, like, clicks. Like, he's got, like, groups.
Like,
that, like,
four different
it's
groups.
It's like turf wars, right? Like, he's got enough employees that, like, they band together, and it's like those girls versus these girls or this team.
If your back office girl is talking to somebody, I'm worried because there's no, you know, it's that voice in her head.
Right, there's no one to talk to. So, like, like, yours, what they're doing is banding against you, but, like, they're all doing that anyway, so that's fine. But, you know, like, we got to deal with, like, oh, well, our hygienists are pissed at the front desk girls, and the front desk girls are pissed at the freaking, you know, assistants. And so.
Those are some good points we're going to bring up next week.
I'm telling you, it was a fun conversation with her, but.
Oh, my.
Anywho.
But it's a blessing.
Yeah, it is a blessing.
Yeah.
Do you love your job?
Yeah, that's good.
I think dinner shoes is a great point. If you're graduating listening, I would be excited. I mean, I think it is what you make it at this point. I think the averages are crap. I think if you want to be successful in dentistry right now, you can be killing it, you know, if you put your mind to it.
Let me throw something into about this case presentation stuff. You know, so much of case presentation and fees is directly related to your self-confidence and your self-image and really how you're feeling about, you know, the dentistry you're doing, as well as what the staff feels about that. You know, talk about don't overpromise and underdeliver. You know, do it the other way around. But, you know, Payman's done your CE. You've done more CE than all of us probably combined.
No, maybe, right, let now, alone, he's kind of getting there.
I've been gunning.
He's been, he's been getting
rapid rewards points.
But with that comes a certain confidence and a certain mojo and a, you know, the appropriate swagger. You know, I was telling Sully yesterday, you know, I'm really feeling good about my bone grafting right now because the implants I'm putting in my graft sites are tightening up, you know. They're racking really out the handpiece at 80 Newton centimeters. And so I'm feeling good about that. So I feel good about the next case presentation. And that builds on itself. And patients sense that. You know, it's like that, you know, the bear senses the fear in your eyes if you turn and run.
Yeah. I see that every day with the kids in the office. Like, I mean, if you have a four-year-old there and you walk in and you look like you're scared to treat a four-year-old. Yeah. The kid knows you're scared, and so that gets them scared.
That's my problem.
And so
that's the bear.
Yeah. So you walk in, they're like, I don't want to deal with this kid's like, I don't want to deal with you either. And like the dentist is like, I don't want to deal with you. And so like, it's all about that confidence right there. And like, just getting that,
you know, it's a quiet confidence, you know, it's the Teddy Roosevelt, mm-hmm. you know, walk softly and carry a big stick. You know, and seriously, patients get that.
Unless you're me. And then you're just loud and you carry a big stick.
But you know, so we've all been there where you go, you're going to need a crown. You know, really, you know,
it's going to cost some money. I don't know if you want to pay for it.
Yeah, I know a lot of this audience is young dentists that have a lot of debt. You know, look what you're paying in interest and you're paying these people back. Look what you did to earn the title to do this and to keep your license to do this. You know, it's okay.
I mean, and telling them what they need. I mean, being honest, you know, just freaking tell them this is what it is. It's a crown. You know,
say what you mean.
I can't
mean what you
it.
Say.
Sorry.
And don't say it mean. You know, say it, be honest. Because those same people just, you know, are going to go over here to Mercedes Cool Springs and not blink twice at a, you know, $2,000 car payment.
where do y'all want to go with this podcast? What are we doing? Are we gonna keep what are y'all's thoughts on this? Man, I feel like
I'm always a big fan of quality content, like giving good stuff out instead of just because we need to have 700 episodes, we have to keep recording.
And it's been a grind. I mean, this will be our 20th episode.
Yeah.
That we released, which
ask
is
ask your audience. Ask your audience to give you some feedback.
Yeah, when we need to. I mean, like, what I would like to see us do is, you know, this episode released right here at the end of June. And I'd like to kind of see, you know, one, get responses from people. What do you want to hear more of? That sort of thing. And then I think maybe take a month or so off to just keep recording and talking to people, because I agree. I want this to be about good quality content.
What I like to do, one of the things that I've been in back of my mind is to go to schools, dental schools. There are only 50 some of them. Try with few and go in there, try to see and talk with some of the more influential people in the school, from professors to ASDA members, presidents, and start talking about what they want, what are they going through. Some of the things that we could give them a little bit outside insights about what's out there in real life, and just to kind of relate and get a feed from what's going inside their dental school. Because this comes out because every school is different. And everything, like you said with Dr. Scherer, you said that you wish you had more technology
in
school. So just to kind of get a feedback, I feel like that would be a kind of neat thing to get into dental schools, to get to.
Absolutely, yeah.
A lot of our listeners are young dental students.
And it was really fun this for our first dental school tour we went on.
We went back home, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, going back home is always easier too. But should we give them a little tease about next year?
I think so.
So, you've heard it here first.
We told you about this, Payman? Yeah.
So, we're talking about going to the ASDA.
The national meeting.
Oh, the national meeting.
In Anaheim.
So,
California, it is in Anaheim.
So, cool. Millennial dentists are planning on coming to Anaheim.
Yes.
It's the last weekend of February.
February?
Yeah. And cool. 2018. So, the plan is to go to Anaheim.
Yes. I'll be in Denver in early February for the Meisinger. Alex Miller. That's where I was skiing and the CE.
I like the ski and
just
ski.
Stay out there for a couple weeks.
I know I'm going to Salt Lake the weekend before, but I'll fly back out there.
You already have the like dates planned for all this?
Well,
that's a bro trip.
Yeah.
Okay.
The third weekend in February is badass bro's.
It's like the bro's ski trip. Weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's like the third week in October. So like, gotcha.
That's like a sweet ski trip. So I'm on.
Well, this has been good. It's been excellent. Everything. As far as the sleep goes, I'm very much open to an idea to test it out.
And I do want to say, you know, if we really appreciate all the listens and sharing, and please keep sharing about it. If you can go on and leave an iTunes review, we would much appreciate it. If you can share this with your friends, that'd be great. And please, we want to hear more questions and we want to talk about things, because ultimately the reason we do this is one, to hang out and drink whiskey on Wednesday afternoons, but also to really pass it forward, because we've been very fortunate to learn from a lot of great mentors like you, Pops. And so it's a good way for us to pay it forward. And so ultimately it's about, you know, making others.
Are we still giving koozies out?
Yeah, we are still giving koozies out.
Yeah. How many koozies do we have left? We need to order some more.
We're out. I think we got to order more.
But we have croakies.
We have croakies. So if you want some croakies, Millennial Dentist Podcast croakies or koozies, please email me or message me on the website, and I will get those out to you free of charge, because, like, again, we just want to keep supporting and making people better.
But for a limited time, though.
It's a limited time. All right, everybody. Thanks. Stay tuned. We're going to come back better, stronger. We can't wait.
Yes.
Work smarter.
Not harder.
Thank you for listening to The Millennial Dentist. Visit us online at millennialdentist.com.